Ladies and gentlemen, Susan Johnson, President of the American Foreign Service Association, Secretary of State John Kerry, and the Vice President of the United States, Joe Biden.
Good morning, everyone. As President of the American Foreign Service Association, I'm privileged to join with you and with colleagues from across the Foreign Service and Foreign Affairs community to pay tribute and to honor those who have given their lives in service to the United States of America. This occasion is a special one to honor the service and sacrifice of our fallen colleagues and to recognize their very real contributions to American diplomacy and to our national security. I'm honored this morning to welcome Vice President Joseph Biden, Secretary of State John Kerry, General John Allen, Administrator of the U.S. Agency for International Development, Dr. Rajiv Shah, Deputy Secretary of State William J. Burns, as well as many Undersecretaries of State, Assistant Secretaries, the Director General of the Foreign Service, Thomas Greenfield, the Acting Director of the Foreign Commercial Service, and the Foreign Agricultural Service Administrator. Welcome, all of you. But most importantly, welcome to the families and colleagues of those we are gathered here today to honor, and whose memory and sacrifice command our abiding respect. Ann T. Smedinghoff, J. Christopher Stevens, Sean Patrick Smith, Ty Woods, Glenn A. Doherty, Rage Saeed Abdel Fattah, Joseph G. Fandino, and Francis J. Savage. The past year has been one of heavy loss for the Foreign Service family. Ann and Rage were lost in Afghanistan. Chris, Sean, Ty, and Glenn in Benghazi, Libya, all in terrorist attacks, and we mourned them all. Francis and Joseph were among the many members of the Foreign Service who died in Vietnam during the war. As the commemoration of the war's 50th anniversary began last year, their names were brought to our attention by their loved ones. We are honored to be able to include them here and to do justice to their service and sacrifice. So I warmly welcome the families and friends of those memorialized on our plaque who are with us here. Each Foreign Affairs Day, AFSA places a wreath at our plaque and at the plaque established jointly by AFSA, together with the Associates of the American Foreign Service Worldwide, AAFSW, located on the other side of this lobby, to recognize the sacrifices made by family members who accompany their spouses or parents overseas. I also want to draw your attention to the plaque around the corner honoring fallen employees of the U.S. Information Agency, as well as the one to our right, honoring our locally employed staff who play such an important role, killed in the line of duty. Today, we proudly honor all those represented on these hallowed walls.
Please stand for the presentation of colors and Pledge of Allegiance.
Please join me in saying the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Halt, halter, halt.
Please be seated. There is a copy of the message from President Obama in your program. It is now my honor to turn the podium over to Secretary of State John Kerry.
Mr. Secretary.
Susan, thank you very much for your stewardship and that of AFSA, and a welcome to all of the extended members of the State Department family. We're deeply appreciative for everybody taking part in this ceremony as we mourn and we commemorate and we celebrate our fallen brothers and sisters in service. I want to welcome CIA Director Brennan, USAID Administrator Shah, and of course, the Vice President of the United States. And I also want to thank all of the leadership of the State Department that are here with us today, obviously. The most important thank you that we can all give, and we do, is to the family members. Now, I know this is a mixed day. It's a hard day. It's a day that brings back pain, but it's also a day, I hope, of comfort and of pride in knowing that the contributions and the memories of your loved ones are permanent part of the State Department, as strong as the marble which will carry their names for eternity. Today we add 8 names to our Wall of Honor, 8 people who dedicated their lives to service, and to a person, each one sought out the most difficult assignments. They understood the risks, and still they raised their hands and they said, "Send me." Anne Smetinghoff was just 25 years old when she was killed in Zabul province, Afghanistan. I met her on my trip to Afghanistan about a week before her death. And I remember her face, her permanent smile, cutting through the chaos and the crowd. That's exactly where Anne wanted to be, right in the thick of it. And she was killed carrying out a mission of hope, bringing books to Afghan children who had no connection to her, but who she believed deserved the chance to improve their lives. Ambassador Chris Stevens, who was killed in the terrorist attack at our diplomatic post in Benghazi on September 11, 2012. Through all of the tributes and the memorials after his death, we have learned so much about who Chris was as a person and about his skill as a diplomat. Everyone felt like he was a personal friend. And in fact, for those of us on the Foreign Relations Committee, he was, because he worked there at one time. One Peace Corps volunteer even visited the town in Morocco where Chris served almost 30 years earlier. And the volunteer met a young Moroccan who not only remembered the first words Chris taught him in English, but he said that Chris inspired him to become an English teacher himself. Sean Smith was killed in the same attack as Ambassador Stevens. He was serving literally as a one-man band to keep the Benghazi post running. He was information management officer, financial management officer in general. And Sean, throughout his career, went places that other people didn't. He was the first to volunteer for Haiti after the earthquake, the first to volunteer for Japan after the Fukushima disaster, and so, of course, he stepped up to serve in Benghazi. But with as much time and passion as he devoted to work, he also built a very rich network of friends. His love for the San Diego Chargers was legendary, as were his Super Bowl parties, and he was an accomplished online gamer. He leaves behind his wife, Heather, 2 young children, and I hope they know how much we are all diminished by Sean's loss. Today, we also honor 2 true warriors, both trained Navy SEALs, both fierce patriots with loving hearts. Ty Woods and Glenn Doherty died defending the U.S. annex in Benghazi. And thanks to their bravery and their sacrifice, 30 Americans escaped the attack. 30 Americans are alive today because of Ty and Glenn. Ty Woods was a guy who was always looking for a challenge, always waiting for the phone to ring and for the next big mission. Even though he got a scholarship to wrestle for the University of Oregon, Ty joined the SEALs at 18 because he thought it was the biggest challenge that he could set for himself. He earned a Bronze Star and a Combat V, but he also had a healer's touch, and he eventually became a registered nurse and a certified paramedic. Over the years, he became an instructor and a mentor to younger SEALs, even after he retired from the Navy and began defending our embassies. Ty's close-knit group of friends still miss him deeply, as do we, and our thoughts are with his wife, Dorothy, and their infant son. Glenn Doherty protected our diplomatic posts around the globe, from Iraq to Afghanistan, and finally to Libya. According to his SEAL buddies, Glenn was without a doubt the most liked man you could ever hope to meet. Whether he was skiing or surfing, running or rafting, Glenn always wanted to be doing something and always wanted to be connecting with other people. He wanted to be the man in the arena, the doer of deeds, as Teddy Roosevelt said, and Glenn actually carried that famous speech with him for years as an inspiration. It spoke to the part of him that wanted to protect people and ultimately led him to sacrifice himself defending others. Glenn was from my home state of Massachusetts, and I will never forget how the people of Boston came out to honor him, thousands of people standing watch in the street as his casket came by. Regé Abdel Fattah. He was killed during a suicide attack in Afghanistan last August while working for USAID. He was Egyptian by birth, but his friends and family called him the biggest flag-waving American they ever knew. He loved bad chain restaurants, bad romantic comedies, and dark chocolate, which is always good. Throughout his life, Regé demonstrated a deep passion for helping people develop their full potential. In fact, after finishing his first year in Afghanistan, his first tour, that is, he promptly signed up for the second because, in his own words, he said, "I have more work to do here. 1 year was not enough." Today, we also add the names of two Foreign Service officers that we lost more than 40 years ago. It was another time, another war, but their devotion to their work was identical to the six that we lost this past year. Joe Fandino served in the Air Force during the Korean War, where he sat on the black box during missions, meaning it was his job to blow up the plane if it got into real trouble. So he was a man who understood high-stakes situations. He also had a tremendous sense of humor. On his first Foreign Service posting to the Dominican Republic, he was riding with the ambassador, who just happened to be his future father-in-law. And the rioters began rocking the car. And the ambassador asked, "Well, Joe, what do you intend to do if things get really bad?" And Joe didn't miss a beat. He just leapt up and said, "I'll jump out of the car, tear off my tie, and yell, 'Down with the Americans!'" Joe's family and friends cherished those memories of his charm and his ability to cut through the noise. He died in 1972 while serving in Vietnam with USAID. Frank Savage used to ride his Harley around Europe while wearing a Levi jacket with a big American flag sewn onto the back of it. He was proud of his country and he wanted everybody to know it. Frank volunteered to serve in Vietnam with USAID, and when he wasn't on duty, he helped defend a local orphanage from Viet Cong attacks. He was severely injured in the 1965 terrorist bombing of Mi Con, the floating restaurant, but after a year, he volunteered to go back. And Frank felt that he had a job to finish, which is a characteristic of every single one of these people. Sadly, he became critically ill from his original wounds, and he died in Saigon in 1967. So when you look at situations where danger is part of daily life, you actually develop a different perspective about life itself. I remember that from my own tour of duty in Vietnam with the Navy, working alongside men who became my brothers. And we all came back after losing a lot of friends with a saying, every day is extra. Anne, Chris, Sean, Ty, Glenn, Reggae, Joe, and Frank didn't get enough extra days. And their loss still is real and it's raw. As friends, we miss their joy in living each day to its fullest, whether that was biking across the United States or talking with locals in a Libyan souk or building a replica of the Starship Enterprise entirely out of Legos. They did what made them happy. These were special people. As a department, we miss their love of this country, their belief in our work, and for those of us blessed with extra days, let each one of us honor their memory and recommit ourselves to the mission that they loved so much. I served on the Foreign Relations Committee for 29 years, and for 26 of them, I was privileged to sit near the Vice President of the United States, then the Chairman, and even before that, before he was Chairman. I don't think the United States of America has ever had a Vice President who knows as much about foreign policy, as much about this department, or who cares about it as much as Vice President Joseph Biden. And I'm privileged to introduce him to you now, the Vice President of the United States.
Thank you very much, Mr. Secretary. As you can tell by the exaggerated praise John gave me, we've been good friends a long, long time. I must tell you, I wish I wasn't here today. For the family members, I know from some little experience, this is a very bittersweet moment. But our country wants to make absolutely sure that the incredible heroism each of your family members, each of your loved ones showed, is remembered. That the heroism they demonstrated, and they came by it naturally from all of you, the heroism they demonstrated, and that's what it was, heroism. My mom used to say, the greatest virtue of all is courage. Every other one rests upon it. And to make sure that courage and that heroism is never forgotten. As John said, the contributions and the memories of your loved ones are going to be a permanent part of this State Department, as durable as the marble that upon which their names are etched. The truth is that most Americans don't understand, as they say in Southern, don't understand y'all. Don't fully understand this outfit called the State Department, or AID, or the Diplomatic Security Corps. They know certain pieces of it. They know that the Foreign Service officers are without question among the best educated, the brightest, the most informed people in America. They know that, because they know how hard it is to get into the Foreign Service. They know the academic demands. But what they don't know, and you can't blame them for not knowing, is that in many places of the world, they're as much of a soldier as anyone in uniform. What they don't know, and you can't expect them to know, is they take risks that sometimes exceed those of the women and men in uniform. Just since I've been Vice President, I've traveled almost 700,000 miles in and out of the places we talk about where all of your loved ones served. I've been in FOBs sitting up in a mountaintop where you got three civilians, American civilians, and three military personnel some godforsaken hilltop somewhere. John and I and all of us and Bill and others, we've been places where you see, I call them because I'm getting so old, kids. You see them out there in a circumstance where they're unarmed, and you say, how in God's name can they wander into that terrain? That's the part that you knew. That's the part that you knew about your children, your dad, your husband, your wife. And it probably was sometimes frustrating that everybody else thought, God, your son or daughter is so lucky. They get to go to all those parties. They get to meet all those important people. They get to be in those fancy places. They do that sometimes, too, with purpose. But the thing that John and I, when we were in the Senate, spend most of our time trying to convince people of, is it takes a whole hell of a lot of courage and dedication to do the job your family members do. Those who serve in the State Department, USAID, those who protect them, that they take every single day. And as there are people today, as we speak, who are in harm's way, as significant, as I said, any one of our soldiers stationed anywhere in the world. At this very moment, diplomats, development workers, security personnel are serving in some of the most dangerous places in the world. You know, they do it, the thing that always amazes me, they do it willingly with a passion that astounds me. This selflessness and courage seems to be somehow stamped in their DNA. It's almost beyond the ability. Yesterday, without revealing anything that is classified, we have a daily meeting, the President and I, with the CIA and the director of the NSC and so on. It's called the PDB, the Presidential Daily Brief. You know what the discussion was about yesterday? President making a case about how we have to protect these more dangerously located embassies and being told that, but the State Department, they want to keep sending more. They have more people wanting to go. They know they have to be there. And I was saying, do they not realize how dangerous that place is? No, that's our job. How many times have you guys delivered that message to the White House? It's pretty astounding. Pretty astounding. It's not that these are uninformed people. These are your family members are the brightest people. It's one thing to walk into harm's way accidentally and act with valor. That's something to walk into harm's way knowing, fully cognizant of what you're walking into and doing it anyway. You know, the irony is that in many ways the world today is safer than it ever was. A bizarre thing to say as we dedicate this plaque. The great powers are at peace with one another. The threat of a nuclear war is more distant than it's been any time since Hiroshima. And we've stepped back from the brink of mutually assured destruction. And yet, being a diplomat has become even more dangerous and at the same time more necessary. John and my colleagues in the Senate used to always kid me because I'm always quoting Irish poets. They think I do it because I'm Irish. It's not the reason. I do it because they're the best poets in the world. But one of my favorite is William Butler Yeats, and he wrote a poem called Easter Sunday, 1916, referring to his Ireland at the first rising, as we Irish call it, in Ireland in 1916, the 20th century. And he has a line there that better describes America today than it did his Ireland. He says, all's changed, changed utterly. A terrible beauty has been born. All has changed in the world in the last 20 years. And a terrible, but beauty has been born. Whether it's the Arab Spring, the collapse of the Soviet Union, I go on around the world. We live in a world where instability in the most distant corners of the world can explode and come in the possession of those who wish to harm us. Tom Friedman's great quote about 10 years ago, he said, if we don't visit those bad neighborhoods, they'll eventually visit us. So your kin went to visit those bad neighborhoods so they wouldn't visit us. Where more people in more places than ever before have an impact on American interests, where threats from fragile and falling states go global, or helping societies halfway around the world build working institutions, fight famine, or police their streets, can be as essential to American security as anything else we do in the world. This is a world we can't afford to be absent, where a development expert or a diplomatic security officer, whether it's a civil servant or a veteran ambassador, where their presence is required. America's presence is required. And as we ask more and more of civilians who operate in these tough places, the President and John and everyone in our government knows we have a solemn obligation to do more and more to protect them. So as they work in these environments, chances are better. Each of the eight we honor today, and several of whom I knew, understood this risk. And as John so eloquently pointed out, embraced the mission with a selflessness that's really kind of hard to fathom. Kind of like this guy embraced his mission in Vietnam. Kind of hard to fathom. I say to all the families we honor today, although there's little solace, I hope you do take comfort from the fact that we know, that at least everybody in this building knows, and many more Americans know, and become more and more aware of exactly the sacrifices you made, supporting your child, your husband, your wife, and doing a job that in your gut you knew had to be done, but you, I can't imagine, didn't wish someone else were doing it. So we owe you. We owe you more than we can repay you. And if my dad were around, he'd say to those beautiful boys and these young kids, you got good blood, kid. You got good blood. These are remarkable men and women. We know the sacrifices they made. We're formally recognizing their heroism today. And we have some small understanding of the loss you feel. No child should predecease their parents. And no one should have to suffer the loss of their spouse. It's not easy. As I said, I wish we didn't need a wall like this. I wish I could tell all of you and all of you brilliant young State Department personnel up there, I wish I could tell you we're not going to add any more names to this wall. I wish I could say that with certainty. But the truth of the matter is, there will be more. There will be more. But with God's guidance and a little bit of luck, there'll be fewer than might otherwise occur because of all the work they do and have done. You can be sure that we'll do everything in our power to protect you all as you serve overseas. But keeping America safe demands sending civilians into dangerous places, sometimes alongside our soldiers, and sometimes all alone. America's going to continue to need you all. Need you more and more as every decade goes by, whether you're State Department or USAID family, diplomats, development workers. And once again, we're going to be calling on your families to make sacrifices few other families make. You know, it's often said that only 1% of our population are pursuing the war we just ended and the war we're still in. But that adds up to 30 to 40 million family members. were home alone. Well, they're stationed over like the 66,000 forces we still have in Afghanistan. And the rest of the world goes on. Everybody, I think, is normal. It's not that you look for or those families look for any special recognition. But sometimes the feeling is, you know, every one of you, every day, your son or daughter, husband or wife was in this a difficult circumstance. You get up like my wife did every single day. Our boy was a year in Iraq. It never is out of your mind. It comes to your mind once, twice, 10 times a day. Like watching her stand there before she went off to teach at college and whispering a prayer. But everybody else, it's fine. It's fine. We owe you. We really do. We owe you. You know, the Greek historian Thucydides once wrote, "The bravest are surely those who have the clearest vision of what is before them. Glory and danger alike, yet notwithstanding, go out and meet it." That's what your kids did. They went out and they met it. That's what your husband did. They went out and they met it. That's a remarkable, remarkable trait. And thank God this country, this department is filled with so many like-minded people. We can never stop striving to be a country worthy of their sacrifice. As John said so well. So let me close by saying to you all that you raised, you were married to, you were the children of a remarkable group of Americans. Truly remarkable. May God bless all of you. May this pain, in my experience, the only time you know you're really going to make it is when the first time his or her memory flashes into your eyes. You get a smile to your lip before you get a tear to your eye. I promise you that time will come. And when it does, you know you're going to make it. But every one of you know the truth. They're still with you. And their spirit still lives in this building. Their spirit still lives in all these folks you're looking at. It's a remarkable asset we have. So again, God bless you. And may God keep safe every single solitary young diplomat, aid worker, and person you wear in a uniform anywhere in the world in the name of their country. United States of America. God bless you all. T. Smetanov, J. Christopher Stevens, Sean Patrick Smith, Ty Woods, Rig A. Syed Abdel Fattah, Joe Fandino, Francis J. Savage. I'd like to ask you all to, like to call for a moment of silence. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, please stand for the retirement of the colors. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes our ceremony. Please take your seats for the departure of the official delegation.